You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about science.
Science!
And we have a great crew to talk all about it. And Dr. Scott will be here, and he's being joined this time by Mike Faulkner, who we know otherwise known as Baby Mike on the show, and he's part of the Council of Mikes. So he's one of us, and he's, you know, been on the show many times, and he's also, you know, he's also a rocket scientist. So it's kind of cool that, you know, we would have somebody here to talk all about that. So it should be a lot of fun. And of course, Mr. Mike Gordon is here too to join us on that.
Howdy.
Do you count as a rocket scientist?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not even a little bit.
Okay. I was just wondering about that part. No, you know,
oddly enough, you know, science wasn't, I was interested in science fiction. So I think by just sort of being interested in that, I was interested in science as well, but not like, yeah, I didn't excel in it in any sort of academic way.
Gotcha. And that's the interesting thing with it is, you know, as you know, we both, you know, neither of us are scientists, but we have an interest in, you know, reading about what's happening with discoveries and science and, you know, new inventions. It's just, it's kind of cool in such a broad range that we can definitely talk all day about it. So it should be a lot of fun. And we definitely want to hear from you at home. So please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Want to also give a quick shout out and thank you to our patrons. That's right, folks. Our patrons are so valuable to us here at the ESO Network. And Earth Station One, of course, is a proud member. And, you know, the patrons at home are what makes the network tick. And it's, you guys are growing and helping by supporting us and such. And I'm very happy to announce that as of June 1st, we are going to have a whole new Patreon. That's right. We are going to be, you know, offering new items for different levels. And, you know, some people will, you know, still have some of the great same benefits that they have currently, but, you know, other ones will be getting new things, including, yes, you at home, if you become a patron, yes, you can be a member of the ESO Network and get to sit in the geek seat. That is right. It's so exciting. But then there's also possibility of even having dinner with the folks at the ESO Network at DragonCon. You know, it's a great time to socialize with us and our way of saying thank you for supporting us. So there's all these different things that are going to be happening, and we'll be making the formal announcement on next week's show. So we'll tell you everything that's going to be offered, all the different levels, and it should be a lot of fun. And hopefully, you know, if you're not a member, why not? You listen to us. You take advantage of fully of us with the free show, and we'd love giving that to you. But wouldn't you like to listen to Earth Station 1 48 hours before? You know, you can get it on Wednesday. We are available almost every Wednesday on our Patreon and then to the general public on Fridays. You know, just little bonuses right there. And you could also get Earth Station Who and the DragonCon report, which is, you know, coming out this week. By the time you listen to this, our patrons will be listening to it also. I think that's pretty awesome. And it's going to be about to go public to the general public by then. So it's just a little bit of a perk for joining up for the Patreon. You could do it really easy. And for as little as 25 cents a week, you could help support the ESO Network. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. Pretty straightforward, pretty easy. And we do appreciate you. All right, let's get started with this week's Rants and Raves, where we find out what's on our minds. Something I've always wondered about you, Mike. I know you love, you know, comics. You love a lot of the sci-fi geeky stuff. What else do you get into? I know you and Michelle have huge, huge music libraries that you guys listen to and go see, you know, some live shows. And you also, you know, collect records and CDs and stuff. you know, tell us a little bit about that. I want to find out more. What else are you into?
Well, I mean, I collect way too much stuff. That's for sure. I have way too many collections, and it's just crazy. There's, you know what? It's interesting because as far as music goes, I think, you know, I still get stuff digitally, but I don't really get a lot of like CDs or albums anymore. I mean, we like going to record stores, sure, but I don't have a huge vinyl collection. I don't have a really great record player, for one thing. And two, now that vinyl's hot again, it's a little bit more expensive. And you know, I mean, to me, it's like, I like to take the music wherever I'm going to be. So, it's just handy to have it digitally. And, so I wouldn't say that, we have huge music collections, although we probably, you know, do. But yeah, I think the problem is that we just collect too many things. I mean, I used to collect, in addition to comics and books and artwork and figures and, you know, I mean, there's tiki mugs, of course, which I've only really gotten into probably in the last few years, just because of, you know, it started out with like every time I went to a tiki bar, I'd get a tiki mug, and then I would get another mug and then another mug. And now it's just getting crazy where, you know, places like Mondo and Geeky Tikis are putting out these targeted mugs, like for me, you know, like Star Wars mugs or Star Wars tiki mugs or Star Trek or Marvel or whatever. Mondo's doing a great job with those as well. And it's hard, you know. My mom always likes to refer to my toys and tikis and stuff like that as dust collectors. And she's not wrong, because they do collect a lot of dust. Unfortunately, I don't have them in a nice, nice case, but, yeah, I'm sort of, you know, I don't need another thing to collect because I've got too many things to collect. I know some people will only collect one thing and they're the master of it, you know, but that's just not something I've been able to I've struggled with it. Let's put it that way.
Oh, I could totally understand that. For, you know, for us, it's almost the same thing. You know, we've had to start paring down what we've been collecting. And there's times when, you know, I would love, I need to get all these pop figures, but then it's like, maybe not. You know, as you get older financially, you would think, oh, I could collect everything. I get a paycheck. But then life gets in the damn way. that's the bad part about it. You know, I love going to, you know, spending times in used CD shops or used bookstores or like a place like McKay's up in Chattanooga, and always going there and, you know, being able to go pour things in. But, you know, like what Judy and I are doing right now is we're going through our CD collection and we're transferring everything to digital and, you know, putting it all on hard drives. And we're going to probably, you know, trade in all the CDs that we have and, you know, just get, you know, credit maybe to get more stuff just so we can,
right.
Just so we can, you know, keep on building our libraries and stuff. Yeah. You know, we don't have Apple Music, but we have Amazon Music. And so we can hear any song that you want. But if you're in the car or something, it's nice to have it all on your phone or, you know, playlists and stuff, so you don't have to use data and such. Because, you know, some of us don't have unlimited data plans, you know, because that gets expensive also. But, you know, I've noticed, like, for me, I've had to cut back on things I've collecting. You know, I used to be a huge comic book collector. I used to probably spend close to $50 a week on comics at one point. And it's very easy to do, especially nowadays. That's 10 comics. Not like how it used to be when I'd bring home like 50, like maybe 20, 25 comics or something. And, you know, when you had subscriptions and you followed all these storylines and such. Now, you know, like, I know you also have been, like, switching to the trades.
Yeah, I'm pretty much mostly trades. I still get about, maybe 10 to 15 that I'm getting like non-trade form.
Okay.
But most everything else I'm reading trades. So
okay. That makes sense.
But like everything else, I mean, book-wise, comic-wise, music-wise, movie-wise, like anything that I like purchase, like my to-read, whether it's even like movie-wise and TV-wise, it's like now I'm collecting stuff in my DVR, and I find that all of those things, I have there's a to-do list. There's like a to-read list, or like there's a stack of things that I need to read, to need to watch, to need to listen to, blah, blah, blah. And that's just insane. Like those lists, like I don't think I have to buy any more books or movies or anything like that for the rest of maybe this century. And I would have enough to listen to or watch and read. And yet I cannot go into a bookstore without buying something. I cannot, it's hard for me to go into a music store without buying something as well. It's just, it's kind of out of control, really.
Oh, exactly. It is completely sometimes, especially if I go to a comic shop, because most of those are owned by, small businesses and such. And I want to help support the small guy. And that's the thing that's interesting about it, is when you get to the point of having, I don't really want to pick up single issues. So I usually ask them, so what do you recommend to read? And I pick up a trade or something. And, just to be able to say, hey, I dropped 15, 20 bucks here. And, just to get, and most of the time I've read some really amazing stuff. And, you also then find out, hey, I like this comic shop. They're actually giving me stuff I would actually like to read. People who give me, the basic stuff, and it's just like things, oh, are you reading Walking Dead? Are you reading, and it's like, yeah, but, and explaining to them what I've given up or what I've not stopped and I've stopped reading or things like that. It's interesting to do. But, when you have something like Record Store Day, or something where they have the special edition releases or concerts or such, because there's certain bands that I really love. And then when they put out something special for Record Store Day, it's just like, gotta get it. And,
it's really difficult to say no to that stuff.
Oh, it is. It really is tough. But it's interesting, if I think about it, what I've given up, I'm not really, like I said, not really collecting comics all that much. I have a PlayStation downstairs in our basement that I barely play anymore. So, I even picked up, Kingdom Hearts 3, and looking forward to it and everything. I just haven't had the time to play it. And it's tough. And, trying to figure out time to read comics or read a book or, music is, for me, I can do that anytime. I can do that while I'm working, while I'm, cooking, while I'm, cleaning house. And that's always a nice thing. And same thing with podcasts. That's why we're hopefully everybody at home is listening to us while they're doing an activity or driving in their car. And of course we like to say, hi, everybody. So it's pretty cool. But, it's just, for me, it's easy to do. And that's one of the things I love. We used to play guitar. I just don't really have time to do a lot of that anymore. And, you just do different things and, try to find as much time as you can to do the things and, whatever takes priority, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, it's just one of those things where, I find that a lot of us in the geek community and even outside the geek community, I know tons of people who, collect stuff, and it's one of those things. It's kind of like the geek seed. It's whatever you're passionate about. Right. Some people collect sports stuff. Some people collect, cars, they're working on a car, that kind of thing. Or, there's a lot of other, some women collect shoes, purses, that kind of thing. And, it's just one of those things where it is kind of interesting to find out like what people do collect. And unfortunately mine is just, like I said, a lot of geeky stuff that I really am trying to get a handle on as I get older, because I'm running out of room.
No, of course. Well, I know some people even collect tattoos.
Yeah, and I can't get to some of that stuff. Tattoos is another one too, where a lot of people spend their money on tattoos. Every time I think about getting a tattoo, I'm like, I can't afford it because I'm already buying comics. So,
well, exactly. It's like we had to put aside money for, mine and Judy's new tattoos that we're getting. And, it's not like we're rich or anything, or that our Patreon is going to buy tattoos for us or anything like that. Because I think the people at the station would kill me if I did that. Mm. But, it's just like you say, it's a neat hobby that people do. And, everyone has their own little thing. People, like you said, fixing cars. Some people, as their hobby, they collect sports memorabilia, or they collect, their hobby is going to see different baseball stadiums, or, going to, stuff like that. It's pretty awesome, how much diversity there is out there and such. And, it's just a little way I thought it'd be kind of cool to, find out about you and me. So.
Well, absolutely. Here it is. This is episode 474. Mm-hmm. Of our run, and there's a lot of times it's amazing how little time in that over almost 500 episodes now we're working towards, and very little do we get a really chance to just hang out and talk about ourselves. So
exactly, and because it's all about us, of course. That's why we talk about that. No, not really.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would love, we definitely should look at doing an episode where it's just us talking about, different stuff. Sure. I think that would be a blast. Well,
as an end to this segment, as far as collecting stuff, what is one of the prized possessions in your collection of everything that you have? What is one thing that you're like, if there's a fire, I'm running out with this?
Oh, well, my ass, but that's tough because it depends. I probably would grab my computer. That's my prized possession because that has all my music on it. It has, if I lose that, I also have, family pictures and stuff. So yeah, probably something like my computer and my hard drives.
Yeah, well, I mean, almost everything should be on the cloud though, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that costs money, my friend. You remember that?
You're not kidding.
But it's interesting because, that gets into the whole other thing, that's true. Everything collectible that I have can eventually be replaced.
So there's nothing that you have in your collection that you wouldn't sell?
Oh, I've sold my collections in the past.
Right. So is there anything that you're like, that is primary to you that you're like, nope, I'm not selling this. This is important to me.
No.
Wow. See, that's, I'm not at that point, man. I have some stuff that I definitely would try to get out of here.
Okay. Well, that's totally fair though.
Some items. Some of them are, some of them are valuable, but some of them are more personal. Obviously, I think one of the things that I hold most dear is it's a coin that I got at the second San Diego Comic-Con that I worked at. It was done for, I think it was an anniversary of the comic Grendel. And Matt had got these coins made of the character of Grendel. And he was selling those at San Diego. And I had had such a tough day getting set up because it was my first time setting up at San Diego by myself, and it was really tough, and it was just not a fun day. And when finally the convention started and someone came to relieve me at the table, I was like, I know exactly where I'm going. So I went right to Matt Wagner's table, and luckily he was there. And I was like, I hear you have these coins. I'm interested in getting one. And his son was there as well. And his son said, well, he said, Matt said, which number do you want? Cause there was, I don't know, 100 of them that they had pressed, and they were all numbered. And he's like, which number do you want? And his son was like, get number one. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can get number one. And sure enough, I got number one. So, and he did a little sketch on it and everything like that on the packaging or whatever. And it just, I don't know, for some reason that I had earned that coin that day. And that's kind of one of those things that's kind of special to me. And so I would definitely try to pocket that on my way out if I needed to. And I can't see myself selling that at all, ever. And there might be some other things too. I'd have to think about it some more, but that's the one that immediately comes to mind.
No, it totally makes sense. And, you know, we've talked about this because you also like getting autographs and such. Would you try to save those?
Well, sure. I mean, if I had a chance, I mean, I have some autographs, and I have some autographs that some people who are not around anymore, you know, my autographs of Leonard Nimoy, Adam West, you know, Carrie Fisher, mean a lot to me, not only because I got the chance to meet, you know, people who were important to me, but also the fact that I can't get those again, you know? And those represent moments that I got to spend with them, even if it was just like 10 or 30 seconds, you know? It was a chance that I got to say thank you to them and to interact with them, in a way that, when I was younger, I never thought I'd be able to. So those kind of items, sure. Yeah. Those mean something to me too.
That totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. Well, that was awesome, sir. Great, you know, sharing a little bit with each other. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with, you ready for this, folks? We are going to be looking at science!
Science!
Michael Rennie was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We've got some really big movies coming out in theaters this weekend, and I do mean big quite literally, because it's time for Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Now, if this movie is anything like the trailers I've been seeing, it's going to be really great. I have loved all the trailers they've done so far with their unusual but fantastic use of classical music. I mean, I would have never thought to have a Godzilla trailer set to Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but somehow it really works. It creates this eerie, interesting atmosphere, and I'm super hyped for this movie. Now, the interesting thing is that I actually wasn't the biggest fan of the previous Godzilla film. I mean, I had fun watching it in the theaters, and there were things I liked about it, but I felt like it didn't have enough Godzilla for being a film called Godzilla. I think that problem that I had with it is going to be fixed in the sequel, because there's going to be so many monsters just on screen fighting at the same time. It looks like it's going to be over the top in the best way, and I personally can't wait to see it. Already have my ticket. And for a complete change of pace in theaters, we also have the movie Rocket Man, which is the story of famous musician Elton John. Now, the interesting thing about this movie is that normally it might not be one that I would be rushing out to see in theaters, because I'm not always the biggest fan of biographical movies. I think that sometimes they get hung up on trying to capture the story accurately, but also kind of heighten the drama, and you've got kind of this weird mix of trying to like make up some of the details but also tell a true story. And sometimes biographical films can feel a little bit dry, at least to me, just my own personal take. But what I've really enjoyed about seeing the trailers for Rocket Man is that it looks like they're going to take a little bit more of a fantasy spin on it, actually. It's like, I believe there was one clip from the trailer where you see somebody playing the piano underwater. And I think that is a really great way to do this movie, because you want to just capture, you know, who Elton John was, what his artistic vision was. And I think that this is a really great way to portray that on screen. So, of course, you know, maybe there probably wasn't really somebody playing the piano underwater, but this is a good way to kind of show his imagination. So I'm looking forward to it. It looks creative. I've been starting to see some good buzz. So I don't know whether I'll be able to see both these movies in theaters opening weekend, but they're both definitely ones that I can't wait to see. So hopefully they will be fun. And that's it for entertainment content this week. If you're looking for more box office stuff, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com. This week, I'm going to be reviewing the new live-action Aladdin.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And we're inviting you to check out our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. We talk all things DC Comics, television, movies, and news.
We'll give you weekly comic recommendations and keep you informed on what's going on with DC TV and movies.
We are part of the ESO Network. You can catch a new episode weekly on iTunes, Google Music, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Hey, everyone, welcome back to Earth Station One. Now it is our science segment.
And there is a lot to talk about science-wise. And, of course, we have our science expert, Dr. Geek himself. Scott McGay is here.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we also have one of the many council of members of the Council of Mikes with us. Mike Faulkner is here.
Hello, everybody.
Howdy, sir. How you been?
Good. How you doing?
All right. And let's just dive right in because there's a lot of news. And I think the biggest thing, at least since we've last recorded, was the announcement that, yes, the United States, NASA, is going to pull a Ralph Cramden and bang, zoop, a woman to the moon.
yep.
Tell us more information about this. How is this really an official thing that's happening?
Well, it's part of a series of new initiatives to take you to the moon. There's going to be like a whole bunch of things that are going on. And that got a little bit of press just because it was, you know, kind of cool to have a female astronaut be the one to go to the moon this time and, you know, and stuff like that. But there's like a series of things that are happening all at once. And it's this kind of this really kind of neat working with private industry and NASA doing its thing. You know, when people started talking about privatization of space, they were worried that there was going to be like, you know, the Coca-Cola logo on the moon or something like that. It may be Virgin Galactic might get there first. But it seems like that right now, NASA and private industry are kind of working hand in hand to see how quickly we can kind of get back up there and get to the moon. So that's really great. I mean, what it seems like is NASA is going to be able to focus on what it does best, which is a lot of the know-how of how to plan a mission and what makes it successful, and allow for the businesses to kind of work out the kinks on some of the new delivery systems and the like. You know, there's the person at Amazon was going to be sending up a probe that was going to have
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, he was going to send up a their trip to the moon was going to send six rovers and so forth like that. And then for the NASA trip with the female astronauts, part of that is the Lunar Gateway that they're going to be focusing on, which is kind of like the ISS, version 2, but not as big. It's only at phase 1 is only going to be able to support two astronauts. A few delivery vehicles down to the moon. And then phase 2 will probably double that, maybe make it to 5 people at one time. You know, NASA has said that they don't want to bother making something as big as an ISS for Lunar Gateway because they don't want to spend all their resources just trying to establish that because they already have a mandate to get to the moon and then get to Mars. The first female astronaut to the moon very well may be the first person to make it to Mars, just because they're halfway there.
Interesting. So, so the goal is to use the moon and have a space station around the moon, orbiting the moon, to build sort of a jumping off point. Or what's the goal? What do we hope to get out of going to the moon again?
Two things. One is to act as a sort of a base of operations for building things that are going to go to Mars and so forth. Things that don't necessarily have to escape Earth's gravity from the start, right? And that could be a big help because you use less fuel and so forth. And then the other part is to actually use the resources of the moon itself. But I mean, it's this lunar gateway is sort of a truck stop, if you will. You know, you're going to be able to send something from Earth. It's going to be able to attach. You'll have a transfer of crew and resources. Some things will go, then send to the lunar surface, and some things will attach to other vehicles and go on to Mars and beyond.
Oh, so yeah, so it's going to have the typical things of a truck stop would, like a subway and a weighing station.
Right, and a Wawa, right? Right.
Right, exactly. As long as it has good coffee, I'm fine with
that. Right, yes, exactly. Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, in my mind, I think space stations, I think 2001, A Space Odyssey, right? And I, you know, something big and elaborate. And this is going to be more like, a very elaborate tent that is, you know, has the ability to modularly connect to other things, you know, and stuff like that. Because in reality, science fiction tells us one thing, but reality tells us, if they don't have to make it as big as they have to, they won't. Just because of having to create an environment to support and all that other stuff. Just doing what they're planning on doing is going to be a massive resource pool and stuff like that. So they really have to think about what they're doing. And if saying that they're going to have the first female astronaut to the moon, it gives them the excitement that people need in order to get behind the program, then all for it. I mean, and it's not to belittle the hard work those astronauts are doing. I mean, they're qualified regardless of gender. It's just that if that's what the media needs in order to get behind it, then fine, you know?
Yeah, so I just sort of have like this sort of roll my eyes a little bit when I'm like, if she comes out there and steps on the moon and says, this is one big step for womankind.
hopefully, the astronaut that does that, it will be more.
A little bit. Leave that to the trashy papers to do the headlines with that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I agree here. That's a great way to get the public back interested in space. I mean, we haven't been slacking off in any degree as to what we're doing in space with science and engineering and stuff. But there's something that's kind of sexy about a moonshot. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Putting people on a body outside the Earth, you know, like the moon, and then going to Mars. That's going to draw a lot of attention. That's going to draw a lot of the next generation to space travel and make them kind of like what I was, you know, like, I want to go to the moon, you know, that.
Well,
kind of,
exactly. Right. And it's also a chance for humanity to finally get out of low Earth orbit for the first time in 40 years.
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing too. And, we're all of a certain age. So for us, this is kind of the second time around going to the moon, or at least the idea that, okay, we've already been there. We should have already been to Mars. We should have been talking about going to, Io by now, but whatever it takes to get excited about going beyond the moon, please, let's do it.
Well, that's one of the biggest disappointments I've ever had with, science and such, is the lack of us doing human spaceflight and such in our lifetime. And I remember before the Challenger disaster that they had all these huge missions planned and such, but they started, trying to focus more, I hate to say it, on war and, the Cold War and such. And there wasn't anyone to really challenge the United States for space at the time. So it wasn't a huge priority. And then it's like when the Challenger exploded, it was like the wind came out of everybody's sails.
Oh, absolutely. And you are absolutely right. You know, the when Challenger happened, there was such an excitement. You know, it was a civilian going into space. He was a teacher. This is, you know, everybody was going to be tuning in. There were classrooms around the globe that were going to be doing the lesson plans and everything. It was so high profile and so anticipated that when the Challenger disaster happened and that loss of life, everybody went, "Oh my God, that's right. This is a risky business, isn't it?" You know,
exactly. It's space. It's supposed to be dangerous.
Right, but I think people forgot that, if that makes sense. I think they got too complacent with what they were seeing. You know, that we had these repetitive, successful shuttle missions one way after another, and you know, every one of them is a chance for things to go wrong a thousand ways. And it goes to the testimony of how much the people at NASA and everybody involved tried to you know, not have that happen. So it really sidelined manned spaceflight for a generation.
Yeah, it was really the Chernobyl or the Three Mile Island of the space program. You know, a lot of it became complacency, not on the part of NASA. They've been doing, you know, amazing work, but you know, just the American public, like, oh, it's a shuttle launch, big deal.
Yeah,
you know? And then Challenger and Columbia, you know, kind of put it back in the spotlight. And like we kind of said earlier, you know, with the corporations that are getting involved, I think that was what really lit the fire under a lot of people. Because as loath as I am to say, let's put it in the hands of big corporates to, you know, make this happen, they kind of lit the fire and said, okay, your government's not going to do this, we're going to do this. And it kind of made us all sit up again and say, wait a second. Wait.
Right.
Well,
now?
Yeah. Well, I know for a fact that since like 1971 or maybe even earlier, the Hilton Corporation has had blueprints for a hotel for the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's fully designed and ready to go. And, you know, they were planning on it, and it was a plan for a space station on the moon. And, yeah. You know, there's Japanese companies that have similar, you know, for full space stations up on and moon stations. And they've had caverns plotted out already for where they can actually build these stations inside of that, you know, would help protect from radiation and such.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's pretty amazing,
man. Yeah. This gives me hope. I can be a space tourist before I die.
I'm so hoping it will be a reality. You know, and you're younger than all of us here, Michael.
So. I know. I'm not even in my 40s yet. I'm excited that I'm part of the shuttle generation. I wasn't around for, you know, Apollo or anything else, but like my desire for space travel was really born with the shuttle shots. And I remember the Challenger, you know, incident. Mm-hmm. It was really an earth shattering kind of moment for me in my childhood. So the promise that there's the possibility of, you know, even space tourism, even low orbit tourism, you know, sometime within my lifetime is just mind boggling. You know?
And when I talk about tourism, I'm not talking about just taking a big airplane up so I could float for a minute or two.
Right.
Right. You want to experience space.
I want to see the earth below me spinning, you know, I want that as to be blown away by that. That's exactly what I want to see.
Yeah.
I want to make a Zoom call from the moon. That's what I want.
Want to broadcast an episode of ESO from the moon?
Yes. That's what I want.
Episode 1,321.
Hey, no, okay, you got to write that number down because that number now is locked in.
Right.
You have to, you know, there's our countdown.
We just need a few more patrons, that's all.
Exactly, because the wonderful patrons will be able to, you know, help support us going to the moon.
Yeah, well, after all, you already have a space station, so, you know, we're already there.
True. But the thing is, you know, one of the other great things since last time we talked to you, Scott, was the publication of the first picture from a black hole.
Oh, my God. Now, was that not awesome?
Exactly. It just looked like the Eye of Sauron. It was awesome.
Okay, so it was so funny. The moment that image was released and it hit the internet, I must have gotten like maybe 3,000 copies of it. in every version that you could possibly get. And people were busy doctoring it with images from Disney Black Hole, from Lord of the Rings, you know, and everything like, oh, you know, further detail shows, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, stop. I want to actually take a good look at the real thing. You know, that is, and you know, what's funny about it is people are like, well, it's a black hole, right? I mean, haven't we known what this is supposed to look like? You're like, no, we had an idea of what they look like. We had a sense of what they should look like, but this was at first a real good image of one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was always an artist rendition of what a black hole would look like based off radio signals and such.
And isn't it a little ironic that it actually kind of looks like what the artist's renderings were? I mean, they, you know, it's not identical. It's not it's not like the black hole from, what was it, The Impossible Planet from Doctor Who. Interstellar or something like that. But it was still just fascinating to see something so powerful in our universe, affecting stars and planets and gravity and space and time, all what happening right there, and you know that moment captured. It's a work of art.
The only thing that scared me about it was that little spaceship they saw orbiting it right now.
It hasn't moved since you observed it, right?
Exactly.
No, but isn't that amazing? I mean, so to kind of to play off of that, because I've got this list of topics, and you guys are doing a great job mentioning a bunch of them. But there was one here where, you know, the Hubble telescope captured 265,000 galaxies in one image. And it took information from 16 years worth of data stitched together in order to show what that looks like. And if ever you wanted to, you know, everybody thinks they know what the universe looks like. But every time we send something up or have a little bit more technology, you get a slightly better view. And you realize, oh, my gosh, we are literally just a tiny little speck, aren't we? You know, and the fact that we can figure all that out. And the fact that that this image of the 265,000 galaxies shows us something that's just about 500 million years after the Big Bang. I mean, that's I don't even know how to process that.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah, and yet that happens, and you know, and. You know, the people on the Hubble project, you know, put that together, and it's, you know, phenomenal. And, you know, and meanwhile, people post the next thing about their cat, you know. it's just, you know what I mean? It's weird. So I really appreciate, you know, the science moments here on ESO Network, because it's kind of cool to talk about something uplifting.
Yeah, images like that really kind of put you almost in a place of thinking about what's out there. I mean, we are the only planet that we know of with life on it. And then you look at that, you're like, there's gotta be something out
there. Oh, there's gotta be.
Something there.
There's gotta be. Unfortunately, there's probably a warning beacon around the Earth going, you know, attempt no landing there. You know,
mostly harmless.
Is now off limits.
Right. Yeah, we're mostly harmless. I love it. But that's true, right? I mean, that and the black hole picture. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, it's just amazing to me that, you know, I really hope that someday our society gets it together and puts it all together as one and goes out and explores. I know that sounds very Star Trek.
I was going to say, all right, hippie.
No. No, I would rather, you know, there's so much to explore and so much we don't know. We don't know still half the things that's underneath our ocean.
Oh, interesting that you should say
that. That's a nice segue.
That's a nice segue. Gee, I wonder why you might have mentioned that one.
I have no idea. Go for it, Scotty.
Well, recently we had yet another exploration of the Marianas Trench. This next generation level submarine, Viktor Veskov piloted it down to 10,927 meters below the sea's surface, down to the floor of the Marianas Trench, where he spent 4 hours and actually potentially discovered, because you have to go through and verify and all that stuff, but potentially discovered 4 new species that we didn't even know was there. And then you made another discovery that we'll probably talk about in a second, I'm sure. But, I mean, unfortunately, the discovery of new life kind of overshadowed by the fact that he discovered micro elements of plastic and possibly a piece long big enough to have writing on it. And I apologize. I really tried to research the rest of that story, but unfortunately what ended up happening was the internet sent like 100,000 copies of like plastic found at the bottom of the ocean, and that's all the information that they gave. It wasn't like a way to. I was looking for a picture of it. Hopefully he like snapped it back. A picture with his camera or something along those lines, because that would be a very powerful meme. But also to find out more about how something from the surface made it down there that far. I'm just really mesmerized by that, because for us to deliberately get to the seafloor, it takes a lot of technology, and it's not easy, and it's very risky, and stuff like that. So. I want to know more about how it happened, but it also obviously, not to make light of the issue, but obviously we're all connected, and stuff that we have on the surface can reach anywhere on the planet, and that should give everybody pause, and stuff like that. So it's important that, the discovery of the plastic was mentioned, and it's very important, but also, like I said, 4 new species of life that, he potentially also discovered.
Both of those are amazing in different ways.
Yes. One's uplifting, the other one's scary. I don't know. Like I said, I was trying to find out. It's very hard to process check and verify stuff that you find on the internet sometimes. I was trying to get an exact quote from his article and stuff like that, and I couldn't. And I heard references to this piece of plastic with writing on it, everything from, a tiny little something that was indescript to a candy wrapper. And so I don't know what it is or what it was. If it is a candy wrapper, it's probably the most famous candy wrapper in the world at the moment. And that's why I was hoping that there was some sort of picture that might have snapped or something. But unfortunately, I just couldn't. And so if anybody can find more information, and wants to send it along, send it to ESO and they'll send it to me. I would love to know more.
Yeah, there's an interview with Forbes that he did where he talked about very vaguely what the material was.
Right.
They asked him if he had seen some trash down there at the bottom, and he said that there were a couple items. One was definitely like a square that could have been plastic, and then one was a triangle. And on that one, it had a very sharp edge, so it was definitely man-made. It had like a discernible imprint of an S on it.
Right. And how that turns into a candy wrapper, I don't know. So that's my problem with the way it got reported around the world. Obviously people grab that for their own purposes and to get the message out that we should be careful with our waste, which is very important. But like I said, I read the Forbes article. He wasn't he made it sound like, yes, this is happening, but it's not the disaster that, the game of telephone makes it happen. The fifth article you read, and I'm not trying to belittle anything or anything like that, but it's just like, but the fact that there is man-made waste that can make it to the seafloor, the Marianas Trench. I mean, how does that work? Is it catch and ride on a whale? Does it dive down? How does that work? I would love to know, because that just, not only do we not know what's on our own planet, but how it all works. We have so much more to learn about life here too.
Absolutely. I want to get to some of the other items on your list, Scott, in a second, but I want to ask Michael, since he's here, if he's at anything that he wants to, like, is on his mind as far as new science discoveries.
The last article really touched on something for me, because my previous life, I was a engineer on a submariner, basically, in the United States Navy. So, like, underwater is, something I dealt with for several years. But along with that, too, I'm really deep into nuclear science, because as someone who qualified as an engineer on a submarine, and then went into work in the nuclear field and in the more commercial side, you know, that always pops up on my radar as something that's important. And I noticed that the Three Mile Island, we had talked about that a little bit earlier, they're actually going to close. They're going to close that nuclear power plant. A lot of it is due to cost and you know, regulations and stuff. And one thing that came out of that was another article about what the future looks like for nuclear power. And there's a company out in Oregon called NuScale. What they're doing is they're trying to get away from the trend of building nuclear plants that are economies of scale. They're large because they have to be, because you want a giant reactor to put out a lot of power. They're trying to do something with small modular reactors, where they're going to line up, you know, 12 of these things in a row, basically, be able to port them from place to place, make it so they're a lot safer than our current, you know, models are, and really try to make it more affordable to have nuclear power. Because a lot of people see nuclear power as one of the futures of our energy landscape.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was really interesting to see, you know, how they're working to make the future of nuclear energy not only safer, but also smaller and cheaper and easier to run, you know, in a smaller footprint.
Yeah.
It was really interesting, though, because when we were up in the Northeast on vacation, and, you know, we were up in like Boston, we were outside of Rhode Island, we were up in Maine, we noticing all the windmills.
Mm-hmm.
And the turbos, and it was just amazing to see how much they had up there. And the, even in right outside of Boston, in the city areas, they had them. And it was just, you know, awesome to see. Is there really a future that possibly wind power and such?
There is a future, I think, with wind power and solar power and hydropower. The biggest thing, though, is that those technologies honestly have kind of stalled out a little bit, because we kind of chase where the economy is, you know, like, mm-hmm. You know, coal was a big thing, and the natural gas has really taken off. And that's a really a lot of the impact on nuclear is, because it takes, as we know from down here in Georgia, you know, we're building a couple new power plants here. It takes a long time for a nuclear power plant to come up to speed, you know, from ground up to fully operational. And a lot of the pursuance of the, you know, of natural gas and then everything else, it put coal or solar and hydro and wind kind of in the back seat. And so you can't really get the same amount of power on the grid in the same kind of footprint, you know, if you know what I'm saying there. Yeah, it's the economies of scale just aren't there. And so I think there needs to be a lot more research done on how to make those more efficient and more powerful. But I think there is, as you see from Germany and in Japan, you know, they're transitioning more into the renewable side of the house.
Right. And in fact, Germany and France made a major investment in nuclear power. And they have several aging plants that they need to either retrofit or change, or maybe make the decision to switch to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And so this new technology, you know, thankfully we're not the only one looking at it. So we can see how it works in other countries too, and kind of learn from that too.
Yeah.
Very cool. What's something else that's on your list, Scott?
Okay. Well, let's see. You know, one of the things we like about talking about science is to get that awareness out there that anyone can be a scientist. Right. And that which kind of challenged the idea of, you know, what a scientist is. And I know that that's funny coming from the guy who wears a white lab coat with the rainy specs and all of it, you know. But there is a database called Request a Scientist, which now has more than 9,000 women scientists included in their database. And so it's projects like that kind of get that awareness out there. So that was kind of cool to see that they were getting some notoriety in the press and trying to get that out there and to make sure people knew about that. Let's see, something else that I have on here. Oh, yes, that the Universal Translator has made a step forward. Google AI just did a demonstration about how it's able to translate speech into your own voice. And the demo that they have on the article that I shared on the Think Tank group and so forth. It's funky because it's clearly your voice, but it lacks some of the spontaneity of your voice. And they actually talk about how that's part of the problem, because you want to be able to capture those pauses and the energy in the response. You know, it's one thing to say, "Hello, my name is Scott," and it's another thing to say, "Hi, my name is Scott," and you know, to tell whether or not I'm happy or sad, and stuff like that. And so, the algorithms that the AI is using to be able to do that are ones where they're trying to make the translation as few steps as possible, trying to take the waveforms and make that translation without actually going from waveform to text back to waveform.
How long of a translation is it, though? You know, how long does it take?
Oh, it's it's seconds. I mean, it's almost real time, depending on your process, depending on your connection speed and stuff like that. But how accurate it is right now is still in debate, because they've done a lot with Spanish and they've done a lot with English. But Russian and or Japanese. That will take a lot longer. You know, stuff that's more tonal will be harder to do. But right now, it's able to do Spanish pretty well.
That is awesome. But it's interesting because Siri can't even understand and translate my text.
Right? Oh my god! I'm sitting there going, you know, play the Hobbit. What? Play the Hobbit. What? You know. Never mind.
I'm not so sure about, you know, nuclear war was caused by Google Translate, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then, some of the other things, again, going back to space a little bit, the idea that, what do we know and what can we expect? The Juno spacecraft of Jupiter's magnetic fields. They've discovered that Jupiter's magnetic fields change just like Earth's. And somehow that made a headline. And I looked at that one. Well, isn't that kind of what I would expect? It's another planet in the solar system just like Earth. Yes, it's not exactly composed like Earth, but, you know, a magnetic field is a magnetic field. So it's kind of sometimes when you get a revelation like that, it's kind of nice to know that there are consistencies with the universe and stuff like that. So that was, one of the little articles. And then the last two that I had on my list were a little funky. One was a theoretical article about how we could move the Earth out of its orbit. And I looked at that and went, why would you want to?
Right.
I mean, what is going on with this? I mean, are you so bored? And have you not seen Space 1999? It doesn't go well. I read this article and it went for pages and pages about different possibilities about how you could push the Earth out of its orbit. And basically the only one that's actually even remotely, and I use this term loosely, feasible, would be to use asteroids and near Earth gravitational slingshots that could push the Earth and get the momentum and the energy necessary to push us out of orbit. But then it's just like, but that's crazy stuff, right? But if a thought project like that leads you to some other discovery, then I guess that's okay. I just, I like the Earth where it is right now in the Goldilocks zone. We have enough problems with other problems. We don't need to be changing that. And then the other article I came up that I saw that I wanted to spend a little bit of time on was talking about the colonizing of the moon and other planets. I touched on it earlier. Mike Faber, you mentioned about how Japan has already kind of planned out how they could burrow into the caverns to protect against radiation and the like. This article that I came across was talking about how we shouldn't be thinking about colonizing planets, because that's too 19th century thinking, that we should, that, you know, it's too... first world globalization, it's bad, it's evil, and it's not very economical, and that we should try something like Dyson spheres. And I just kind of sat there and blinked and went, okay. So nobody who wrote this article knows just about how colonizing of another body in the solar system is going to replicate basically the same steps as a Dyson sphere. You're still going to have to send tubes out into space that people are going to have to live in for a couple years before you can descend to the surface. Then you're going to have to build an enclosure that you're going to be able to live in that can either burrow into the surface or these other things. I went through the list in my head and went similar. I think this is an argument for argument's sake. The title of the article was like, sci-fi leads us to the wrong conclusion about colonization. And I'm like, I don't think it's sci-fi. I think the fact that, somebody who needed to write an article and pay their rent that month, it was kind of a weird thing. But what do you guys think? Would you want to live on a colony on Mars, or would you want to build something like a Dyson sphere?
I was going to say a Dyson sphere sounds a lot more resource intensive, honestly.
Doesn't it? that was my thought.
You're talking about an entire enclosure at Earth's orbit around the sun,
right,
versus putting some domes down on Mars, which is not a trivial thing. But then building up a city around that and building a community, which, by the way, is going to help us just in case those asteroids that are going to knock us out of orbit actually hit, because right, we'll have people who are not on the planet at the time and thus survival of the species. But I digress.
right. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's just, you guys know, I try to stay positive and forward thinking and realize that there's a solution for most problems and stuff like that. So when I see, an article designed to create bickering, I just kind of really sour at it because it's just silly. All the choices that the guy was talking about are going to require, Mike has said, to get our act together and to have a common future for humanity. So whether it's a Dyson sphere or colonies on Mars or the moon, whatever, I don't really care which one it is.
But most likely you're going to see you're on the moon or Mars, you're going to see Japanese bases. You're going to see China bases, American, you're going to see Indian, you're going to see Russian, you're going to see, all these different at first.
Yeah.
But then they're going to start realizing, hey, if we pool our resources, we can expand more and such.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, once you, and this is a little bit of the history repeating itself, once you get out there and have a colony that is self-sustaining, then, they're going to start thinking of themselves as different from Earth, one way or another. Eventually that will happen.
Sure, they'll become, their own,
own thing.
Exactly. Should we have the people of Earth, basically rule us or control our society when, we have our own thing going here,
Right. So in that case, hopefully we can learn from the past a little bit better than we, did the first time around. So it's, so I think it's hopeful. And I don't know, like I said, I saw that article and I'm like, oh, come on guys, we can do better than that.
I need you to write a top 10 article this week. Can I do Dyson sphere instead?
yeah.
Oh, I don't know. If I have the choice, I'm going to go with the Genesis device.
Oh, right? Yes. It can do it in six seconds, right?
Why spend all that time building a Dyson sphere when you could just, boop, have an instant planet in a day?
Just unfortunately, you use protomatter in the Matrix, and so it's unstable.
Right.
Oops.
Yeah, I heard this guy named Khan wants to borrow it, though.
Right. He wants to. It's intended to be used on a planetary form, so we're going to ignite it in a nebula. That'll work. I'm actually surprised that the Genesis device was able to gather enough material to make a planet out of the Matara Nebula, but that's okay. Anyway, sorry. Super geek out.
That's what this is for.
Yes.
So, any other stories or things that are happening out there that are pretty exciting?
SpaceX launched 60 Starlink satellites recently, and that's part of a project to create 12,000 of them in orbit to create a high quality internet around the planet. So it's sort of the internet in the sky. Shall we call it Skynet? I don't know. But it's that idea.
I don't think it's going to end well. I understand.
How many movies have we got to tell us that now?
Yes. But see, what I like about this, though, is that it's one component of the future that everybody seems to kind of ignore. I mean, they focus on, like, the communicator and the fact that, you know, the Enterprise crew can use that to communicate with anybody almost regardless of where they are, right? There's not a distance problem. You know, like, oh, oops, the Enterprise is on the other side of the planet. We can't communicate for another 10 minutes, you know, or something like that. You know, there's nothing like that. And that's partly goes to things like wireless energy charging for the devices to, you know, a really super internet signal. And so something like the Starlink satellites, if it can create a internet coverage from around the entire globe, then that's kind of a cool thing. I mean, it also has its problems if you ever want to completely unplug. You know, you'll never be able to say, I'm sorry, I can't hear you call or you know, completely ignore your phone anymore, I suppose. That could be a bad thing. I still think that it's a cool project.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it is, because this way it also would take away any kind of internet regulation from any certain country or businesses.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it would basically make internet available to all.
Yes, absolutely.
And they would then, you know, oh, wait, this country has high speed internet where this country doesn't have, you know, these basically countries don't have anything. And it would basically make it a level ground for everybody.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. And it would be, it could be an eye opener to a lot of people around the world. So,
but just imagine, Scotty, yeah. Just, and I was talking about this at this cookout I went to earlier. We were talking about it. Just think about how many people in rural areas who don't have that great of an education, now they have access right at their fingertips to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, don't have to, you know, be, you know, if they want to get, you know, learn, you know, how to do something, it's right there at their fingertips. They don't have to go, you know, oh, you can't learn that because you have to go to school to do it or trades or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's all going to be available to people in, you know, if to Africa, into countries in, you know, lower Asian countries or whatever. It's just going to be America, even rural America.
Mm-hmm. So it's very important. And in fact, this is sort of the 21st century version of the rural free delivery concept, you know, which we, you know, we had in this country with the idea of the free postage to encourage the rural communities to be able to have access to communication lines with the rest of the country. And in this case, it's not only the educational aspects that you talk about, but also things like for doctors to be able to see their patients, you know, maybe do a virtual consultation. Or maybe use a robotic assist to do an examination. There's all sorts of different tools and technologies that Doctors Without Borders are currently using, and that, you know, where it's possible. And there's even some talk about how you could have, you know, for like the elderly and stuff like that, have an AI assistant that can kind of monitor everything and then let the doctors know something if a reading goes awry and, you know, an alert, and then the doctor be able to get, you know, fast, quick connection. So that's it has so many more bonuses than the potential Skynet reference I made at the beginning.
Well, this is also really exciting too on the global scale, because it was 3 years ago almost to the month now that the United Nations declared that internet access is a basic human right. And yeah. 3 years ago, we were all kind of saying, okay, well, how does that work? How do we make that happen? Well, now here we are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it took a while to figure that out. And you know, this goes back to, you know, part of the problem with the stalling of the American space program. You know, we did a lot with, like you said, we've done a lot with satellites and doing a lot with rovers and stuff like that. but this sort of, you know, private enterprise launching the satellites, I mean, you needed something like SpaceX in order to make that possible, because it wasn't a high priority for NASA. Right. They're more for science sake, and that's not a bad thing. But it does mean that, you know, rather than 3 years from now, you know, 3 years later, it could have been 15 years later or 20 years later.
Right.
Well, and, you know, I for one, certainly hope that, you know, the more people who have access to the internet will have access to our show so they can listen to us all the time.
Yes.
That's
how it's going to get listeners.
And that's why we can get more science segments.
Exactly,
too.
Because I'm afraid this one is run out of time. But
oh, no.
Thank you, guys. It was nice to get an update on all things science.
Science!
And we'll be right back with the ESO Network Con Report.
She blinded me with science.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about John Wick Parabellum. So going into this film, I was not sure really what to expect. I figured there would be a lot of fighting because it's a John Wick film. And I definitely got that. I also got a little bit of storyline, which is good since it's the third movie in the series, and I went in thinking it was the last one. I did not expect it to end the way it did. The final scene with Lawrence Fishburne had me, like, looking at my watch, going, wait, how long is this movie? Since I thought there was going to be a whole other act going on, not the credits. It was actually quite funny to me, and good on you for having me so engaged in the story by the end of the movie that I thought it wasn't over. So the fight scenes were straight up fantastic. Amazing. I do think they overused the glass mirror room a little, since all the other fight scenes were super amazing and beautiful without any weird gimmicks. But even with the crazy mirror glass room aside, it was still amazing and so neat and kind of like squirmish to watch. I know the audience in the movie theater for some of the scenes where he was stabbing people in the head were like, and screaming and stuff, so that was really, really funny to hear, too. I wasn't seeing the ending betrayal, and I'm really interested to see what the fourth installment of the film will bring us. I am really hoping for the same cool fights, because John Wick film, but also more storyline to either finish the series out or keep it going. Just not fight after fight after fight with a little story. However, that did work really well for this film with how they ended up finishing the film out for part three. So, no shame there, because the gratuitous fight scenes were fantastic. And you should go see it. If you are a fan of the first two John Wick films, you will like this one. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back for the week of June 1st. Oh, my God. It's here already. It's the ESO Network Con Report.
It is. We're almost halfway through the year. We're in June, man. And in June, there's not a lot, but June 14th through the 16th is Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. I will be attending that event. I will not have a table, so but if you do want to say howdy, and if you're going to be at Heroes, let me know, because I love walking around and visiting with folks. And I'd love to chat with any listeners and that are going to be there. It's a really great show. I haven't been there in a few years, so I'm really looking forward to spending some time up in Charlotte at Heroes. Then we've got a couple of comic conventions or comic cons happening in July. July 12th to the 14th is the Atlanta Comic Con. That is at the Georgia World Congress Center. And Mike and I will be there on Saturday, and then we will be hosting a couple of panels. Mike, are we allowed to say what those panels are yet?
Not yet. Okay. We haven't gotten the final, but we will be there on Saturday.
We will be there on Saturday hosting panels of to be determined. So watch this space for more information. We're looking forward to returning to the Atlanta Comic Con. And then just a couple weeks later, July 28th, is the Atlanta Comic Convention, which is a one-day show here at the, I believe it's at the Marriott, what was that called? The Marriott Century Center? Is that
right? Atlanta Marriott Century Center, right off of I-85 and Claremont Road.
Yeah, and that's a good time. It's a one-day show, and Mike and I will probably be there. Again, not having a table, but we will, at all these shows, we don't have tables, but we'll be wandering around and doing stuff. So if you're going to attend any of these shows and you want to reach out to us, please say howdy, because we like going to conventions, and we like talking about them, too. Now that I've finished talking about the events that are happening coming up, we want to talk about a big event that happened this past weekend. And unfortunately, Mike and I could not attend, but our friend Raven was there. Raven, welcome back to the station.
It's good to be back.
And yes, I'm talking about MomoCon, who now I understand this one was pretty huge, over 39,000 attendees. Over 4 days. I guess this is the 15th year of MomoCon. How long have you been going, Raven?
I have been going to Momo since 2011.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I've been off and on for, I think I've been about 5 or 6 years. So, yeah, unfortunately I couldn't be there. So you'll have to tell us exactly how it was. How did you enjoy MomoCon?
Oh, it was great. Like, it seems like every year the crowds keep getting bigger, which is awesome to see, considering what it came from at the Georgia Tech Center.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that we have the World Congress Center now that we can grow into instead of like being compacted into the Georgia Tech Center. But yeah, this year was awesome. Like there were so many great costumes this year. And like the vendor hall seemed a little bit bigger, a little more fuller, but there was still more space for us to walk. And the game room was definitely bigger. There was so much more this year because I didn't spend a lot of time in the media room this year because I wanted to get out and see everything. And plus half the guests that were there, I was like, I have no idea who these people are. But I was in there on Friday with Patrick Warburton. That was
very
pretty
nice.
Cool.
Very nice. So is he there like promoting anything in particular or?
I think they were saying he was just there to like have fun and meet the fans, which was pretty cool. He was very nice. I actually live streamed that on the Instagram page, but I'm not sure how the quality was because the internet kept going in and out. Cause in the press room, we have our own, Wi-Fi to bounce off of.
Gotcha. I did appreciate, for those people who don't know, Raven took over our Instagram account, the ESO Network Instagram account for the weekend and posted various pictures and streams. So we appreciate that. That was, since we couldn't be there, it was good to have you make us feel like we were there.
Yeah. And I still have a lot more photos to post on there. I just don't like posting like one right after the other because then those posts don't get seen. So I've been like spacing it out and like I'll probably continue until I get rid of all the photos I have. Be like throwback to MomoCon, this is what you missed. And then Saturday was pretty cool because when I went into the media room at least once or twice during the weekend. On Saturday I went in for Keith Silverstein, who he does a voice on Overwatch. I can't remember the character and he does a lot of other stuff, but I know him from Miraculous Ladybug. He is the voice of the villain Hawk Moth and Gabriel Agress. And it was really funny because Saturday was our Miraculous Ladybug photo shoot. So I was in full Marinette and like I immediately had to leave the shoot to go to the media room to do the interviews. And, like, I was sitting front and center. He comes in. He sits down. He's like, you look familiar. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But he was super nice. And, like, I asked a few questions about the show and, like, what he liked on it. And afterward, I did some photos with him in front of the MomoCon banner that we do, and I posted those photos, and I wandered the con. I was like taking pictures of everybody. Like the biggest, I would say the best costumes I saw all weekend. There was a guy in a full mascot Scrooge McDuck that made my day. Like, I was like, this is my childhood, and this guy is amazing, and I love it. So that was pretty cool.
I saw the picture that you posted of that, and some other people, some other friends of mine posted pictures of him too. So he must have been either in a very, very central location, or he got around in that outfit.
I mean, he got around because, like, I remember on Saturday before, you know, heading back to my friend's house, we were in Centennial Olympic Park shooting some photos, and he was outside in that heat. And I'm just like, dude, you are going to roast. But apparently I stopped him and I was like, what are you doing out here? You need to go back inside. He's like, oh, I'm going to my hotel. I'm like, you're walking to your hotel in that costume. Take the head off. It's like, I was telling him, I was like, you know, you need to wear like a camel pack under your mascot suit so you have water, like that you could run up through your mask. So that way you stay hydrated and you don't die.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you were, what you were wearing on Saturday. Were you in costume on Friday as well?
I was casual. I think it was casual Raven. No, casual Raven was Thursday. Because I've retired that version of Raven that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm working on, probably a spoiler alert, but at Dragon Con, you will probably see me in Uncle George's version of Raven. You know, George Perez.
Excellent.
I am doing his version of Raven for Dragon Con this year. So I was doing casual because I was going to do like some of my bigger stuff, but because of the heat index, I was like, I don't want to do that. So I was casual Raven on Thursday. And then I was supposed to do Ariel because I had just finished the Kiss the Girl outfit on Friday, but I packed my wig, I packed my corset, I packed my shoes, and I forgot my dress.
Oh no.
I was like, oh no. But I ended up doing Kara Danvers on Friday, since, you know, working for Catco, she's a reporter anyway, so it worked.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was a casual Kara Danvers. And then Saturday I was Marinette from Miraculous. My Adrian actually had a hat that they hand embroidered, like the one that she makes on the show, and added like that old school press card to it. So I was wearing that on Saturday. And then Sunday, I was just so exhausted. I was like, I'm going to be casual today. I don't care. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, what would you say was your favorite event over the weekend?
Oh, honestly, I think like my favorite thing about the whole weekend was getting to meet Keith Silverstein as Marinette, and getting to have that interaction. And it was really funny because my Adrian didn't know that he was there. They had no idea who the voice actor for Hawk Moth was until I told them. And I was like, yeah, you know, your dad's going to be here. And they're like, what? I was like, yeah, Gabriel Agreste is going to be here. He's like, what? So we went to, I had asked Keith where he was because I had looked around the whole convention trying to find his table. I could not find it. So in the media room, I was like, hey, where are you at? Like down there at the Walk of Fame, because I've looked and I couldn't find you. And he told me, you know, where his table was. He told me that he was doing a signing at 5:30. So I was like, okay. So we went and waited in line for his signing. And my Adrian was like, I'm just going to get him to sign my badge, because they were doing a free signing for a personal item. And I was like, you know what? I kind of want a photo of all three of us together, since it's like from the show. So I ended up paying for a selfie with him without telling my Adrian until we got there. And Adrian was like, stop spoiling me. Like, stop buying me things. Stop doing this. I'm like, do you honestly think I'm not going to let you get a photo with the voice actor of the character? Or the voice actor who plays your father, you know, type thing. And it was so great because we had baked croissants to give to all the Adrian and Kat Moore cosplayers at the shoot. And we had some left over and we gave some to the voice actor. And he was like, oh my God, I love croissants.
Who doesn't love croissants? I love croissants.
I love croissants. They're delicious.
Well, cool. Well, it sounds like you had an amazing time once again. And like I said, we appreciate all the images and the streaming that you did. So, I already know that next year that they announced that MomoCon 2020 will be May 21st through May 24th at Georgia's World Congress Center once again. But they will be moved to Hall B instead of Hall A. So it's even a bigger, I guess it's twice as large as Hall A. So they are moving and expanding already. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So
I didn't even know that.
Absolutely. So we will hopefully we'll see you there next year.
Hopefully I'll see you there next year.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Well, thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. Let's thank our guests for being here. Dr. Scott, it was awesome to talk a little science with you.
Oh, it was awesome to be here. Thank you guys so much. It's such a great honor.
Anything you want to shout out about?
Well, actually, AnacroCon in Georgia has invited me to be their new science track director. Went to the last two Atlanta recently, and it's always sad to see one of your favorite conventions retire. And I wasn't really in the market for a new con. But while I was there, it was so funny. They came up to me and said, you're the science guy, right? And I went, no, actually, that's Bill, but that's okay. Hi? And they said, well, we're looking for someone to take on our science track. And we've seen you here many times. And would you consider doing it? And Debbie and I talked it over and stuff like that. So starting with this coming February 14th, 2020, I'm going to be in charge of their science track.
Science!
Yep.
Congratulations.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
Congrats, my friend. You deserve it.
Thank you. Well, I couldn't have done it without the ESO and Hulanta or TimeGate back in the day when it was, because that's really how all this started for me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That is very, very true. It is true. You know, that's where you got your start.
Yep. Yeah.
All those years ago.
Yeah, I know, right? So much there.
And, of course, Michael Faulkner. Thank you, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a blast to talk about science, kind of get back into my roots. It's been a while since I've had the chance to geek out about, you know, just hard science stuff. So
it's fun. It's so much fun to talk about, too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, in my heart, I just like, you know, we're all science geeks.
Well, and see, my background too is, I've got a bachelor's in physics. So it's like, there are days where I'm like, why am I could be, okay.
You know, I totally understand that. Totally understand. Anything you want to shout out about?
Hey, I am still doing the Timestamps project over at creativecriticality.net. I've been working my way through Torchwood Season 1, about halfway through that, and then I'll be jumping back into Season 3 of Doctor Who, the revival era. You can find that at creativecriticality.net, and it's been quite the ride for that, too. About 4 or 5 years now of doing Doctor Who story by story. So if you want to join in the fun and read where I've been and where I'm going, be sure to do so.
Exactly. You're on Torchwood right now. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
We did. And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I do. Earlier this week, I received an awesome surprise from my nephew. It was a much delayed 50th birthday present, but it was well worth the wait. It was a plush Tiki Zombie in plush form based on a drawing that he did. There's a company called Budsies, which will take any drawing that you do and make it into a plush doll, plush figure. And this is good work, too. They do great. He's had his character Super Cheese done this way, and getting the Tiki Z in the mail was just, it still puts a smile on my face every time I look at it. It's just so awesome. And like I said, these guys do a great job, and it's not terribly expensive. I mean, it's a one-of-a-kind item, and it's custom-made, so you can imagine that there is a tag on it, but it's not within, it's within realm of possibilities for people to check out. So, and like I said, they do just such great work. I mean, if I could, I would, he's comfortable enough that I would sleep with him. So,
okay.
But, I mean, he just feels so soft.
You're talking about the plush, right?
I am. Yes. Okay. I am. Okay. Yes. Definitely talking about the plush. Anyway, so check it out. Budsies, I think it's budsies.com, but you can look at it on the internet and find them. And if you've got a drawing, they'll do a plush of it.
That's pretty cool. Fantastic, sir. All right, my shout out real quick. Today here on the station, it is Memorial Day as we're recording this here in the United States. And I just wanted you to, at home, thank your veterans. People who, you know, served the country, like Mr. Faulkner, who did. And, you know, thank you for serving the country and making sacrifices and, you know, putting time towards, you know, helping to defend this country and doing some amazing things. My father was a veteran. My grandfather was a veteran. My great-grandfather was a veteran. So, you know, everyone knows a veteran, and we have so much to be thankful for in this world right now. And, you know, no matter what country you're listening to us in, you know, we're relatively, you know, in a very good spot right now. There's things going on, but we're not getting into that. But thank the veterans in your lives for making the sacrifices, to putting in the time to defend the country that you live in, and, you know, be able to, you know, take a day off from work. And, you know, not just, this is just not a day to go to the beach or go to the park or, you know, such. This is a day also to remember those who didn't make it, or, you know, or did make it but made sacrifices to do it. You know, this is just one of those times. Just my thought, and, you know, wanted to do that. Next week, we are going to be going back to the movies, and we are going to be looking at Godzilla, King of the Monsters. That's right. It's summer movie time, and we are starting to get to our reviews, and there's a lot to talk about, and Godzilla's next on to the bat, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk all about it. Until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will talk to you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done. Hey. Boom. You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.